Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on October 12th, 2020, from my home studio here in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. This episode features the latest on what's happening with absentee voting in the state, especially in Richland County, which has already experienced delays. We have a quick update on what's being done to safeguard the future of Parris Island. The South Carolina Ports Authority sees encouraging growth. We hear about how the Charleston restaurant scene is doing now that occupancy restrictions have been lifted. And Dr. Anthony Fauci speaks with PBS's Judy Woodruff about why the pandemic didn't have to be this bad. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from y'all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a 1 to 3 minute long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Just tell us your name, where you're calling from, and what's happening in your world, whether that be going to work, telecommuting, or teaching from home, or helping your kids out, or what's going on. If you're unemployed, if you've tested positive, we want to know about your experiences and how you've been handling this situation at 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control data. There have been 3,355 deaths, and currently there are 152,242 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of October 12th at 4 p.m. Now, we've been averaging around 735 cases a day over the past week. Our current percent positive rate is 9.1%, which is a little bit below our 7-day average of 11.3%. As for testing, we're averaging about 6,591 tests over the past 7 days. Currently, there are 685 patients hospitalized with COVID-19, 177 are in intensive care units, and 87 are on ventilators. As difficult as these numbers are, they are somewhat encouraging because these numbers have continued their steady decline over the past several weeks. Incidence rates from the past 2 weeks show that 24 counties in the state have medium incidence rates, and 22 counties have high rates. So we're still not in the best place there. Obviously, as you can see with our 11.3% 7-day average percent positive, we gotta get that under 5%, folks. Let's start with a quick update on the future of Parris Island, the Marine Corps recruit depot in Beaufort. This has become a hot topic, especially in the first congressional district race, following the comments from Marine Corps Commandant David Berger about potentially closing the training base and the other one in California to create a new location where gender-integrated platoons can train. That's a requirement under the 2020 National Defense Authorization Act. Now, current infrastructure can't handle that, according to Berger. But a bipartisan group of South Carolina lawmakers, including 1st Congressional District Democrat Joe Cunningham and Republicans Joe Wilson of the 2nd and Ralph Norman of the 5th, introduced legislation to prevent the closure by prohibiting the use of federal funds to close or plan for the closure of the base. So we'll see where that bill goes. Next up, last week we started hearing reports from Richland County voters who had not received their absentee ballots by mail yet. We have more details on what caused delays in the second most populous county from county election officials. Now, the delays and the availability of in-person absentee voting has some people asking, can I forego voting by mail, even if I requested a ballot, and go vote in person? Yes, you can. But Election Commissioner Alexandria Stevens says wait until the end of this week to be sure that you haven't got your mail-in ballot.
So if the voters decide to not wait on their ballot and they choose to vote in person, they can return the ballot here unopened, which will decrease the chances of it being challenged or there, you know, there being a challenge coming up. So because we'll be able to go in the system and, you know, note that, you know, we'll be able to see that they've already voted and we'll be able to, you know, properly place that ballot. I do understand that some voters were instructed that if they do receive that ballot, that they can destroy it. I would suggest returning them unless I receive other direction from the state. I would suggest returning it unopened.
Now, if you want to go to the polls on Election Day and have received an absentee ballot, you need to go to your county election commission to get a letter saying that you wish to vote in person. Then you can vote at your precinct. Now, this all sounds very complicated. So y'all, You have time to see how things are going to work out and determine what you want to do here. So either vote absentee, wait for that ballot to come, or go do it in person, or vote on election day, people. But why are we already seeing delays in Richland County? Now, Director Stevens explains that the problem stems from a vendor issue. There were some ballot-style issues sent to the vendor from the county, and there were some conflicts there, but now all the data files they have received are being processed easily. Separately, the State Election Commission was waiting on $5 million in CARES Act money to upgrade to electronic poll books, replacing those paper binders for check-in folks or updating other electric poll books. Now, that money was part of more than $9 billion dedicated to safeguarding the elections.
Now, I do want to clarify that we still have not received all of our poll books. We only received the 10 units to use for training. So I was told today that the rest of the shipment should go out next week.
Which raises another question then. If those poll books come in at a time that we consider to be dangerously close to November the 3rd, what then is our plan B?
Our plan B is to use a paper roster as we have done in the past. My initial thought was to use the laptops that we have used more recently, but as I have been informed, the system, we will not be able to utilize it. So the fallback would be the paper rosters, okay, which we will have prepared.
Richland County is notorious for election issues. Remember when the governor threw out their entire four-member board in February 2019? He did so because of a series of mishaps and oversights, including in 2010, when 1,100 votes were uncounted. In 2012, they failed to deploy enough machines, which resulted in long lines and missing the vote certification deadline. They also missed the 2016 primary recount deadline, and they didn't count 1,040 votes in November 2018. So, a lot going on in Richland County, as we know. But one benefit of legislative changes to absentee voting is that mail-in ballots will be prepared for counting sooner than usual.
We have, as of right now, it's 32 or 30. I'm just going to say over 30, just to be on the safe side. People coming in to start the opening process on the Sunday prior to the general election. And per House Bill 5305, we are able to start on Sunday rather than Monday now. So we will have a number of poll workers assigned to open the outer envelope because we can't start opening the ballot herein until Tuesday.
And as we're going out, just want to let you know on how hype people are about voting absentee. As of October 9th, 671,866 absentee applications have been received, and 455,281 ballots have been issued. And after the first week of voting, 164,547 ballots have been returned. Okay, recite all those numbers back to me. No. Now, the record high for absentee ballots cast was in 2016, and that was 502,819. So we are on our way, folks. The South Carolina Ports Authority said that September volumes reflect the strongest year-over-year activity since the pandemic hit, which indicates a continued recovery and strength in containers, vehicles, and inland port moves. This is good to hear from one of our economic bellwethers. Now, the Wanda Welch Terminal and the North Charleston Terminal saw a slight increase year-over-year and had a record September. For the overall ports picture, movements were down 2% from this time last year, as were vehicles shipped. However, for the current fiscal year to date, vehicle shipments were up 25%, so strong start to our fiscal year here for the ports. Now, this news comes after the port saw its largest ship call in the port, the CMA CGM Brazil, back in September. The ship is an example of the massive container vessels that will soon be able to dock at the port, regardless of tides, once the harbor deepening is completed next year. The governor lifted indoor occupancy restrictions on restaurants on Friday, October 2nd. Now, less than a week after that, folks were packing out restaurants and bars, especially here in Columbia. We saw a photo from one popular college bar, Pavlov's in Five Points, with a packed line of young patrons. Some were wearing masks, but still very packed in. Now, down in Charleston, owners we spoke with say they're still unsure and that they'd rather maintain social distancing than fill their dining rooms to capacity. They're still worried about people getting sick. And South Carolina Public Radio's Victoria Hansen checks in on five establishments she profiled back in March when they were originally shut down.
Chef Chris Marr rolls out dough, then carefully feeds it into a machine, repeatedly stretching it into thin sheets for linguine.
It definitely takes some practice getting used to.
Marr is the executive chef at Betty Lou's Bistro in Charleston. He's had to practice a lot of patience ever since the coronavirus shut down bars and restaurants across the state for 2 months back in March, allowing only takeout. Business, like his pasta, is stretched thin.
Everything just is changing so fast.
The bistro once employed 11 people, now just 4, including Marr, who also washes dishes. Sales are down 50 to 75%, and federal assistance is running out.
I mean, there's a lot of places that are just, you know, in the blink of an eye, just slipping under.
Downtown on Meeting Street, bar manager Megan DeShane sets up tables outside Door Brothers. She's trying to make room for customers.
This dining al fresco is lovely.
Bars like hers are still required to close early, but DeShane is grateful to be open at all. She lost her job 7 months ago until the bar cautiously reopened this summer. DeShane says she's been frustrated by lack of standard safety regulations.
You know, measures of public health and public safety, I don't think should be the burden of a bartender or server. However, that's how all the cards were played.
On St. Philip Street, Stella's restaurant still does takeout.
Alrighty, thank you so much. Can I get a name for the order?
Owner Stephen Nikitas tried to reopen, but says he was greeted with tourists fleeing mandates in their states.
They were here specifically so they wouldn't have to do the right thing.
It didn't feel safe, so he quickly closed again and did not reopen until after Labor Day. He's busy now with locals, but worries he's already lost one neighboring restaurant.
The next few weeks will be very telling as people decide what they've been through. Is that enough?
In Mount Pleasant, a new outdoor patio welcomes customers to the Mustard Seed. Only this day, it's raining. But that doesn't stop servers from running lunch orders out to cars.
We need for people to understand that we do not want to shut the doors.
Andrea Parco and her husband Sal are struggling to stay afloat. They've been in business 25 years and have had to dip into their retirement. Still, they're trying to provide the hospitality they're known for. It can be challenging, with some refusing to follow rules.
And literally fighting with the 17-year-old hostess when she says, can you please put on a mask?
Meantime, Nico Oysters and Seafood down the street has been in business barely 3 years, yet they're thriving.
So we are going to be nice and steady this evening.
Owner Nico Romo says he had some warning, watching what the pandemic did to his brother's restaurant in France. He had online takeout ready, personally delivered food to neighborhoods, and included an item that was hard to come by, toilet paper.
She was like, are you crazy? Toilet paper and food? I'm like, yes, this is where we are.
The publicity paid off. By the time Romo could reopen, he had already hired back his staff and was cashing in on ample outdoor dining. He says he's learned a lot.
I mean, you know, it's a tribute to luck, too. As you know, we got lucky.
Lucky, he says, the ideas he tried early caught on.
Thanks, Victoria, for that report. You can find that and more stories at southcarolinapublicradio.org. Recently, Judy Woodruff of the PBS NewsHour spoke with the nation's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, and what he is concerned about right now amid inconsistent state responses to the pandemic.
In retrospect, Dr. Fauci, was it wise for the White House to host this over 200 people in the Rose Garden, but also indoors, the event for Judge Barrett, where you had very few people wearing masks, no social distancing in retrospect?
You know, I'd have to answer it with a little modification rather than making judgment on a specific episode. I would say something that I have said multiple times, and I have no problem repeating it now, that what you should do to avoid acquisition and transmission of infection is a universal wearing of masks, avoiding close contact, avoiding crowded situations, trying to do things outdoors much more than indoors, and washing your hands regularly. That applies to everyone under every circumstance. So that may answer your question.
Here we are, it's mid-October almost, and despite the summer slowdown and all the efforts to shut down, wear masks, social distancing, and all the things you're talking about, we're seeing an increase in many American states, in many American cities. Was this inevitable?
I don't think so, Judy. I mean, obviously, this is a formidable virus that has an extraordinary capability of being transmitted from person to person. But the kind of outbreak that we had in the United States and that many other countries have had does not necessarily have to have been inevitable. Certainly, there would be a considerable number of infections. But right now, if you look at where we are, we have a baseline of daily infections at about 40,000. It's kind of stuck there at 40,000. That's of concern to me because as we enter the cooler months of the fall and the colder months of the winter, to be able to contain infection when people are more indoors than they are outdoors is going to be problematic. And we're going to have to double down on the things that we likely should have done consistently. But if you look at the response as a whole, there really has been inconsistency. You recall when we had the big spikes that went up to 70,000 cases per day, there were some states that didn't abide by the checkpoint and the phase one, phase two, phase three guidelines. And then to their own credit and to be fair to them, there were some states that tried to do it right. It didn't have to be this bad if we had done it in a way where people uniformly abided by the public health measures that we've been talking about consistently, essentially every day.
Judy and Dr. Fauci, wow, on the same interview right there. That's something. Great to hear from both of them. And of course, thanks to the PBS NewsHour for that clip. Also, remember what Dr. Fauci just said at the end right there, that it didn't have to be this bad. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We talk about life during the pandemic, and we also hear from you, how you're handling things, if you've contracted COVID-19, if you're working through the unemployment system, if you're giving back to your community, or you know someone who is. Tell us about it at 803-563-7169. You can leave us a message with your name, where you're calling from, and again, a brief message from 1 to 3 minutes, because you will be cut off. AT, any new messages, mi amigo?
Mi amigo, yeah, we have new message here. An unnamed teacher from Aiken.
Oh, awesome.
So, yeah, let's hit it, bud. Let's roll it.
Do it.
Hi, I am actually not going to give you my name. I am a teacher in Aiken County, and I'm calling because I am having such a hard time with our school district's decision as of last night, Tuesday night, October 6th, to go back very rapidly to all the students being back in school full time. It looks like this coming Monday, elementary school is going to be going back to 4 days a week for all students, and then after the week after that, I think, is when they expect all high schools to go back to 4 days a week, and then 5 days a week is the week or 2 weeks after that. This decision was made by our board as they ignored the advice of their own advisory council telling them that this is not a good idea. And it's been made to appease parents who are really just concerned about getting back to work. And I understand that. I understand we all have to get back to work. Teachers are not, they have not stopped working. We have been working our tails off to make sure that things are ready for the schools to open. And so they're pushing to open up schools and get everybody back in there, and there's no way to socially distance in a school of any size here in Aiken County. Kids are going to be wearing masks all day long. Teachers are going to be wearing masks all day long. We are not prepared for this. And I really wish that someone would straight up tell the parents, like, okay, great, you can push us all back into the schools, but if we can't socially distance and the contact tracing is a joke, it's a joke, then it's only a matter of time. If we have an outbreak, your school's going to end up closed. So between the two evils, it just feels like we're choosing to push and push and push and get back in, and then we're going to have unpredictable changes versus something that's more sustainable. And I'm just calling in because I'm so frustrated and I feel very undervalued, as most people do during this time. And I just really hope that this goes better than they think it will. But anyways, thank you, Gavin and ATE, for all the work that you guys do. And keep it up.
Oh, thank you to our secret Aiken County teacher. Thank you for calling. Thank you for that great insight. And of course, thank you for what you do. I know we definitely value teachers, and I know a lot of people out there do. That's just so much work that you guys put into those things. My mother was a teacher, and I know how that works. And of course, doing it digitally, doing it virtually, I can't even imagine how difficult that is. So we appreciate that. And it will be interesting to see what goes on in Aiken County. I'm just reading up on some things going on down there, and you know how they have some thousand cases between August and September, late September. So it's, and we don't get the exact numbers from each school apparently, but we do get an overall idea about how many students or faculty have been infected. So it's interesting to see if they're going to start pushing for these, you know, more widespread school days, you know, 5 days a week, 4 days a week, but not tell us the complete picture of what's going on in these schools. That's the difference there. If you want to be as transparent as possible, if you want to be a little bit more open about it, okay. But if you're not telling people where these outbreaks are, that's going to lead to inconsistencies like you're talking about.
It's tough for teachers right now. My wife, she was a teacher for 10 years, and she just got out the year before all this happened to go work full-time at Craft and Draft. So, I feel for all those teachers out there that have, on top of being having to fill so many different shoes, now on top of that have to mm-hmm. be like the warden of the mask wearing and all that kind of stuff too. I know that's really tough. And so, I mean, if you need a place to talk about it, you call us and we'll talk to you about it. Hey,
definitely let us keep us up to date on how that works out. We'd be very interested.
Big time.
Because we definitely got to get some more details about the schools out there. So, yeah, a lot going on.
So much going on, Kevin.
Yeah.
One big thing is you came over the other day and I lent you a movie.
You did?
And you watched it.
The Thing.
You watched it.
Oh, the John Thing. Carpenter's The Thing with
John
Kurt
Carpenter.
Russell.
It's Swoon. Peak. It's absolute peak, right?
It's the best. It's one of the best movies, but it's also the best horror movie that, I mean, I just enjoy.
I agree. It's my favorite movie probably of
wholesale.
All time. Like, wholesale, it's my favorite movie, my favorite film from 82, Kurt Russell. Film. It's so great. It's a film. Yeah, Wilford Brimley's in it. He feels better. He wants to come back inside.
Carpenter, yeah.
I got to. Did you know that he also did the score for that movie? He did all the music.
Jesus. Who's he trying to impress?
He's still releasing albums too, John Carpenter. Yeah. I really got to give props to the dog. From the beginning of the movie, the dog is
dog
the
acting.
Best animal actor I've ever seen.
Besides Tweety Bird.
Tweety Bird. This dog really, you see emotion on its face. It's pensive. It's scared. it's really good. Really good actor. I'm like, damn, that's
just,
a good
it's
dog
just
actor.
A great movie because it's just terrifying. And then there's like, there's cliffhangers. There's moments. If you haven't seen it, I don't want to ruin it for you. But it just it holds its weight from back then till now, and
you
everything
see
else is just
it,
chasing that dream.
Let's just say it like this. Let's be nerds. The practical effects are fantastic, right?
Sure, yes.
They're the best practical effects I've ever seen. They hold up. They hold up to this day.
Yeah.
It's from 82, and it's just crazy good. And like the first time you see that thing explode into a bunch of other things, like you're like, oh, hell yeah, this is cool.
But the worst part is that it's not streaming anywhere, like nowhere. I have all these logins, and I was like, AT, please give me the DVD.
My DVD that I bought in like high school or something. That I mean, man, oh man, what a movie. I love that flick.
And then I was watching some other trash movies too. I mean, especially when I compare it to, I just watched Exorcist 3 over the weekend too. Talk about just like bottom of the barrel.
That's bad.
Ugh, don't even bother with it, folks.
We both watched last night The Witch too.
Yes,
by A24, and it was pretty bad. Like
it's good if you're into the cinematography and that slow build, and you're really a film connoisseur.
But it kind of built to nothing.
You really?
I'm into spooky season right now. Yeah. Like it's Spooktober, and so I want to be spooked for real. And it's called The Witch, and you get maybe like what 4 minutes of witch on screen in a 90-minute movie.
Yeah.
That was depressing.
And you said it was the same director from The Lighthouse, which I watched, which you won't, but you don't need to, because that's just also very similar. But at least you kind of got into it a little bit more, because there are like these two guys stuck in a lighthouse. They're lighthouse keepers, and Willem Dafoe's in it, and a dude from Twilight. And it's
Pattinson,
like this,
the
they
new
slowly,
Batman.
They're like both going insane, sort of. So it's a little bit more fun to watch that. And it's like really great acting. Of course, it's like, you know, film noir, like it's in black and white and all that nonsense.
I don't like black and white films.
But it's also,
like,
just to say, it's really formulaic. It was very similar, reminded me of it last night when I was watching The Witch, because I'm like, oh, there's this big reveal, and only
and
they get the reveal, and then it's like this
enlightenment. I told you, it's the same director, same guy.
Yeah, so it's just, I was like, oh, part two. Except we're in the woods this time.
Got to give props to the goat actor in The Witch. That was a great. I'm big into animal acting, and I really know what I'm talking about when I say this.
There was good acting in it, but yeah, the goat definitely
was a great goat actor.
Let's see.
It was a pure satanic goat too.
Yeah.
It was like
don't
the pentagram Satan goat.
Oh yeah.
Well, no, I mean anyone sees the goat, they're that's the devil.
It's the ultimate, like, you know, when they put that the goat statue of what's his face, like that's the
Baphomet.
Carbon. Oh, yeah, that was a test, and now we know.
Yeah.
No, but
it's a heavy metal band called that.
It's definitely that carbon copy of what that is. Like, oh,
that
there's
is
the devil
that goat.
Goat.
Yeah, it's the devil goat. I mean, you see it and you're like, that's not a good goat.
No,
don't get that goat.
I don't really do much else this weekend. I didn't really do much even on that, like, what, 80-degree, basically 90-degree day pretty much the other day. I was kind of inside.
Yesterday
doing stuff.
It was supposed to rain all day and it was sunny all day. Yeah. And I had to stay inside and watch the Eagles blow it against the Steelers.
And yeah, I didn't even really check in on you, but I'm
I can't get into that right now. I'm gonna start crying. We're 1-3-1 now. It's awful. And the worst part is the division's so bad we might win it still.
Jesus.
It's really awful. Really, really awful.
At least LeBron got another title, you know, switching.
Yeah,
Bron
won. I'm happy for that because Jimmy Butler left the Sixers, and so he can just get out of here.
Very exciting.
So I'm very happy with that. If you guys aren't happy, if you guys like the thing, hate the thing, you let us know. Did you like The Witch? With double V Witch?
Yeah, what's your Halloween scary movie? I watched Hocus Pocus with a friend.
I don't like Hocus Pocus. I think it's bad. I don't think it's a good movie.
What are you basing that off of?
Watching it.
No, like what specifically? Like the humor is there. Bette Midler crushes it. I mean, Sarah Jessica
Parker. I love
Parker
Bette Midler. I do love Bette
witch.
Midler. I don't like that movie, though. I don't like it.
I'm just there for Bette Midler's mannerisms. I don't care for subplots. Hollywood.
I don't love it.
But yeah, I mean, that's if you're going to have Disney Plus, that's like the only thing I'm going to watch on Disney Plus.
Take it out. Take
okay,
it out,
folks.
Gavin.
Well, happy spooky season. Tell us what you're doing. Talk about your pumpkin spice latte. I only get one a year. Make it super exclusive, even more. Haven't
gotta
done
make
it yet.
Count.
I'll let you know when I do. But let us know what you're doing. Check out our Instagram, you know, SC Lead Pod, or Twitter, same handle. You can leave us a voicemail, 803-563-7169, or a iTunes review, or both, or all of them. Do whatever you want. We're all out there for you. Also, stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. Also, consider becoming an ETV member. Membership starts at just $40, and if you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport, another streaming service there, folks. Plenty of great programming on there that your donation helps support. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
Chippy, do you see a squirrel out there? Do I need to get him?